It is 12, a little bit after noon, 12:01 p.m., and this is The World We Live In on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. And just in case if you don't know, this is a show basically about politics, specifically with the upcoming Illinois primary on Tuesday, and hopefully you know about that. Voters in Illinois will be voting for things like governor election, representatives, county sheriffs, county boards, and stuff like that. And it's been quite a bit of campaigning has been going on in this past week. In fact, Representative Gene Ives, who represents the 42nd district of Illinois, was in Champaign this past week. She did a meet and greet with voters at the airport in Savoy. So here's Gene Ives.
To do this fly around, but we thought it was important to get back down to Champaign. It's a big state, a really big state, but we know that it's important to connect with voters everywhere. And so Rich Morfland, my lieutenant governor pick, he's basically covering a lot of the western part of state, even though we have been there. We have not ignored downstate, we have not ignored southern Illinois at all. We've been there quite a bit. And why is that? Well, because a lot of the Chicago-centered politicians like to just kind of forget about the rest of the state. And so that's why you've gotten, quite frankly, some of the policy decisions that have come out of there. They have run the state into the ground. And so now we're at this tipping point. And this is a tipping point in the state of Illinois, and make no bones about it. This election in 2018, it sets up the next generation in the state of Illinois. That's why I'm running. Let me just step back a minute, though. I'm the three-term state rep out of the Wheaton area. I'm a West Point graduate, economics degree from West Point, former Army officer, mother of five children. And in 26 years ago, my husband Paul and I moved to the state of Illinois because Paul found a job opportunity here. And that's where we have raised our five kids, and it is in Wheaton. And from the time that we have left Wheaton to where we are right now, the state has really turned. It's really taken a downturn. And I figured out after serving on Wheaton City Council that the way to protect taxpayers is to go to Springfield and fight for them in Springfield. Because all the laws and all the decisions are made up there. If we don't change Springfield, we change nothing in the state. And the reason I'm running right now is obviously, Rauner can't win in 2018. Nor should he win in 2018.
No.
He can't win in 2018, and he should not represent the Republican Party in 2018. That is the truth. He will be Mark Kirked out of office. And then what are your options? Pritzker, Biss, or Kennedy? All of them want a new tax increase. And the tax increase bill, the progressive tax increase bill that's sitting right there for everybody to look at, it starts at $17,300. Well, that's not a millionaire, last time I checked. This is not a millionaire's billionaire's tax. And even if it were, guess who's the most capable of leading the state of Illinois? Millionaires, billionaires, the upper income folks. And they will.
Oh, we can leave too.
And they will leave. Yes, sir. And we can leave too. And we have been leaving. We, Illinoisans, have been leaving. So we're at the tipping point. If anybody thinks that we pay for pensions, and I imagine there's some public sector union folks here. Everybody thinks we pay for pensions, or we pay for education, we pay off our debt without expanding the tax base, with having a shrinking tax base, you're wrong. Obviously. How do you explain the last 4 years of out-migration? How do you explain the last 2 years having been number one in out-migration in the state of Illinois? How do you explain that? You can't. How do you explain for the second year in a row McKinsey comes basically saying, we are the worst run state in the union? Are you proud of that? Are you proud of the job Governor Rauner has done? Are you proud of the campaign that man has run? No. No. Those are two critical issues. Because when I look at this, I look at it as one thing. You know, obviously there's many character character flaws of, this, of Governor Rauner, and that needs to be addressed. The other thing I look at, though, is his last 3 years are predictive of what his next 4 years would be if he were elected in 2018, which we know is not going to happen. It's going to be a Democrat if it's not me. But if he were elected, how much fun would Madigan have with him then? Right? How much fun would he have with him then? It would be a disaster for the state of Illinois with those two men and their big egos going at it, and the people of the state of Illinois being punished by inactivity and a malaise that has taken over the state in every form. So let's add a few data points to this, because this is a long form topic. This is not like your 8-second soundbite interview. This is not, you're not going to get a slick talking point from me right now, because this is basically to lay it on the line with people who came to see me today and to make you the surrogates for this campaign in the last 5 days?
8 days?
How many days we got left?
Yes.
Six days. I've lost track of what day it is. Okay, so, I mean, you guys have got to be surrogates for this campaign. And so the other day I was looking at a bond buyer article. They do a lot of interesting stuff about particular states and their budgets and everything like that. Well, they had an article up about Florida. And Florida was bragging about how they've increased their state budget every single year. Well, knowing that Florida's run by Republicans, I figured out, well, it's probably not because they took on more debt. And it's probably not because they've been running deficits. And it's probably a balanced budget. So what's going on in Florida? And I started to look at it a little more depth, and I asked one of my policy friends, hey, can you find me some more data about Florida and let me know what's going on in Florida? Well, sure enough, Florida has expanded its budget because it's expanded its tax base. Since 2000, Florida has added 1.5 million jobs. 1.5 million jobs. You know, we're sitting on a population of almost 13 million. Their population is, I think, around 16 million. They've added 1.5 million jobs. What do you think Illinois has added in that same time frame since 2000?
Zero.
21,000 jobs. Nearly a rounding error. 21,000 jobs since 2000. Now, since the recession, we're down still 137,000 folks in the workforce. Our workforce is still shrunk. And by the way, they had another important article out, and I posted this on Facebook. You can find all this stuff on my personal Facebook page. I think it's important to catalog this for folks, and I use it as a catalog myself. That's why I post a lot of that stuff to Facebook. I can find it when I need it. But the other article had the bottom seven states in terms of job growth, and they had Illinois at number 7. I thought, well, that's kind of funny. I'm not quite believing those statistics. Well, sure enough, you know, we were behind states like Wyoming and Alaska and West Virginia, and I'm trying to think, maybe it was Connecticut. Anyway, all of these states, I look up and I'm like, well, none of that makes sense. We have the fifth largest economy. When you compare that, we are the loser in terms of job creation. We have a huge, vast economy. The next one closest to us was like number 24 in terms of the size of economy. And we're sitting here at the fifth largest one, and we can't keep up with these lesser states. It's outrageous. Outrageous. And so sure enough, you take this data, take it to the current year. Let's look at January 2018 job information. And I'm not making this up. This is all out there, you know, Bureau of Labor Statistics. They put out all this information on job growth and everything. In January, Illinois, I'll start with the nation. Maybe that's more dramatic. The nation overall, apparently, according to official statistics, grew off 406,000 jobs. 406,000 jobs. Now, what did I just tell you about having the fifth largest economy? You'd think we'd have a decent amount of that, right? 406,000 jobs. The number of jobs grown in the state of Illinois that same month, 200.
What?
200.
Wow. That's outrageous.
You can't make this stuff up.
I grew 5 of them.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Appreciate that. So are you ready? Are you ready to really turn this state upside down?
Yes.
Are you tired of being punished with bad policies? And this, you know, this feuding going on between two leaders who are supposed to lead us, you know, into prosperity and are actually destroying the state, you know, one bad bill at a time, or one lack of leadership at a time. I mean, that's really the question you got to ask yourself. It's the Ronald Reagan test, quite frankly. Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? Are you?
No.
Did your property taxes go down?
No.
Were they even frozen?
No.
Nope.
Oh, what happened to your income taxes, by the way? Oh, you got a 32% permanent tax increase, the largest permanent tax increase in the history of the state. And that happened in July.
I just paid mine yesterday.
Oh, God bless you, sir.
No.
I know. So, I mean, this is outrageous. This is outrageous. And, of course, all those states that have no state income tax, we have higher property taxes than all of them. And then you had the new Wallet Hub study out that came out, right? Sure enough, Illinois, we're number one. We're number one in something. We're number one in the largest state and local tax burden. Number one. When you measure it against income. Number one. Nearly 15% state and local tax burden all in. Number one in the nation. Now, I mean, some of you guys have heard this story before, but I grew up in South Dakota, a small town called Vermilion, population 5,000 when I was there. Maybe it's 10,000 now. Home of the University of South Dakota, and you know, it's a farming community. My three uncles farmed around there. We all worked on the farm during the summer. My sister still lives there, and a couple from DuPage County called her up and said they wanted to look at property in Vermilion. So they drove 8.5 hours from DuPage County to Vermilion, looked at 7 homes bought on that same day. Sarah says, well, what brings you here? You got a new job? You got parents around? No, we've never been here before. But we can't afford our property taxes, and we need an affordable place for our kids to go to college. So they're South Dakota residents. No state income tax, half the property taxes they can afford for their own retirement, send their kids to college. We're getting beat by states like South Dakota. Think about that. Fifth largest economy. Government's too expensive in the state of Illinois. You pay a large corruption tax in the state of Illinois. Your politicians are passing bills based on emotion and talking points rather than real policy objectives and facts. And this is how we get here. And so now it's decision point. It's decision time in 2018. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? This sets up the next generation. That's what it does. This election sets up the next generation. And it's a perfect opportunity. It's actually, this election is a once in a generational opportunity to actually put a conservative in office, put in somebody who cares more about policy than politics. And the opportunity is sitting there because you have a failed Republican governor. Despite his $1 million, he cannot buy back trust after his betrayal. He can't buy back trust. Doesn't matter that he's got $70 million. Doesn't matter that he spent $4 million on me in the last 2 weeks trying to destroy my reputation and lie about me. Doesn't matter. He can't buy back trust after betrayal, which is why he's done in November. So then what are your other options? Every single Democrat would be a catastrophe for the state. That's why we have the opportunity. That's why we're running. That's why we're running, because this campaign was built on a bunch of faith early on. All I knew is that I was going to sit here after working as a precinct committeeman for over 15 years, or around 15 years, and you know, working to get candidates elected. And I got myself elected in 2012 with the help, and then I worked in 2014 to get candidates elected, and I worked in 2016 to get candidates elected. And I'm talking, I really worked with these candidates, and I worked to get Rahner elected in 2014. After figuring we needed some backstop, having served in the supermajority in 2013 and 14, and under Governor Quinn, figured we need a governor to be a backstop against bad policy. So that's why I've been doing. But I'll tell you what, when Governor Rahner went off the rails and became more like a Democrat than a Republican, that's when I said, if we don't challenge him, if we don't take him on, why am I doing this? Am I just part of a social club? Is that what the ILGOP is, a social club? Or do we actually care about what our platform says? Are we actually going to stand up for the tenets that we believe in, which is smaller government, less taxes, social conservative values, pro-life? I mean, honestly, what are we doing here? So I looked around, I'm like, there's no way. I'm not serving under him or J.B. Pritzker. not doing it. So it's time to challenge this guy. And there's a lot of other people that could have done this. A lot of other people that would have more resources than me, probably bigger resumes than me, that could have done this. But I'm the one actually who knew what I knew what I knew.
I don't know.
Okay.
A note from the back of the classroom.
Okay. Oh, got it. Okay, got the note. But you know, the reason is because you have to sit in the position like I've sat in to understand really the game being played. Because that's where the courage comes from. When you actually see it happening, and it's happening to you, that's when you say, forget it. And this is what primaries are about. Primaries are very, very much clarifying events. Sides are drawn in a primary, and you find out who's who and what's what, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, this primary has told a lot more about Governor Rauner's character than just simply HB 40 did. Let's be honest with ourselves, right? He lied to the Cardinal about that. He lied to every single sitting Republican down there when he said he'd veto the bill. And told us he'd veto the bill, and then he signed it, right? But I'll tell you what, his character was truly revealed in this primary. Because he's been lying about me, and you know it. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's followed my work down in Springfield knows it. The journalists know it. The editorial boards know it. Eric Zorn, you know, is not really a Jeannie Ives fan, but he's an honest man. We don't agree on policy, but I will say this about it. I think he's an honest man. He believes what he believes. I believe what I believe. I think on economic policy, we see eye to eye on a lot of stuff. But we are far apart on many other issues. But today in the Chicago Tribune, he called out Rauner big time for his false accusations against me. Maybe Kathleen can pull up the headline on that one. Mm-hmm. It's alarming. But this is Eric Zorn. He sat in that Chicago Tribune editorial endorsement interview. He saw me take on Rauner. And by the way, I did no debate prep. I went in there to talk about policy, which I've been talking about for the last 5 years I've been down there. I've been following this stuff forever. I read 3 hours a day on it because I think it matters. I think I need to be informed. I didn't do any debate prep. Apparently Rauner did with outside political consultants from D.C. Well, that's what you get when you take your advice from people outside the state. You know, you get an empty suit who can't really articulate Illinois policy. So we took him on in that debate. And Eric Zorn knows it too. He sat right there. He questioned me right there. And he knows why I said, there you go, picking on Mike Madigan again. He knows I was mocking him, absolutely mocking Rauner for blame shifting the entire hour and 20 minutes of the debate. Like he's not the governor, like the last 3 years never happened, like he wants to run his 2014 campaign again, you know, version 2.0. I mean, this is what he was trying to do. He was blame-shifting the whole time. And Eric Zorn knows it, and John Cass knows it because John Cass called him out now 3 times. John Cass just wrote an article that's going to be published tomorrow. It's online right now, saying the same thing. Because, see, I was on WTTW last night in Chicago.
Empty chair.
And there was an empty chair because Rauner refused to show up and to actually talk about issues that are important to Illinoisans. He's hiding from you.
Yes, he is.
He's hiding from you. That's what he was doing by not filling out the NRA survey. That's what he was doing when he hid that personal PAC survey saying that he'd be okay with taxpayer funding abortion. Nobody knew that he signed that or filled it out that way. He's hiding from you because it's all about political expediency. It's all about staying in power, just like the Democrats, as a matter of fact. It's not about moving the state forward and being honest with people. We're on the truth tour. And it's going to be hard for some people to hear the truth because the finances are so devastating when you look across the state. It's going to be hard to tell, you know, higher education, and I'm sitting here in Champaign, hey, guess what, we got to do some consolidation. And you smart boys with all your PhDs in management, you're going to help me do it. All right? I mean, that's what's going to have to happen, though. Otherwise, we fail together. We can't let that happen. A state is a terrible thing to waste. Terrible thing to waste. So, you know, then you had even, I mean, and even before Eric Zorn, let's go back to that, Greg Hines, Crane Chicago Business. Craig doesn't agree with me either on a lot of this stuff, but he's an honest guy. First one to call Rauner out about his deceptive lies, gave him the Oscar for the most deceptive campaign ad this political season. Thank you, Greg Hines. Thank you, Eric Zorn. Thank you, John Cass. Thank you, Daily Herald. Thank you, editorial boards around the state, for calling out Bruce Rauner about his ads. He's got millions of dollars to lie about me, and he didn't have to. He could have talked about what he got done. He could have talked about what he wants to get done. Instead, he knew the negative self. So he's using millions of dollars. So if you're going to let this guy get away with this, then we're all doomed. If we're going to let the guy with the most amount of money lie about me, then they're going to lie about every other candidate in the future. And they're just going to, they're just assuming. And here's what's so just abhorrent about him doing the ads he's done. You know what he's thinking? You guys are never going to find out the truth, and you're just uninformed. You're just uninformed. You're just going to believe it. You're just, you know, you're just not that smart to figure it out. He's counting on voters to be uninformed. It's pretty pathetic. Well, let's prove to him something different, because we already are making a difference in this campaign. We already are. We started down, I think January was it, first poll came out, we were down 45 points. 45 points. Well, we just closed the gap. And our latest polling came out, we're within 7 points with a 3.5 margin of error. That means we're within striking distance. How about an applause for that? I think he's worried. I think we've got him on the ropes. And I trust Illinoisans. I trust people to figure it out. I met with people from all over the state, and we all want the same thing. And people are like, well, how do you know, you only play south of I-80. You're not going to, you know, suburbs aren't going to like you. The city's not going to like you. Oh, my gosh, that is not true. Our polling says that I'm doing quite well in the suburbs, and in the city, and we're even in Cook.
Do you have support in your neighborhood where you live?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I just wondered because the governor doesn't.
Yeah, that's right. Good point. Yeah. Sorry, I mean, thank you, Mark. Thank you for that strong cue from Mark. He's paying attention. Mark down in Decatur runs a manufacturing firm. He took me around. It was fascinating. And since then, he's gotten a bump up because things are happening in the state of Illinois in the small ways, but we need to explode it. But Mark's paying attention. What he's referring to is that Rauner was not even endorsed by his home township. New Trier Township did not even endorse Governor Rauner. So he's getting, you know, people are onto his game. Meanwhile, I'll be honest with you, I had a bunch of pro-life Democrats host me at a huge fundraiser down in Oak Lawn at an iconic bar called Riley's Daughter, and they also put me in the Southside Irish Parade on Sunday. And they came up with the whole thing. That's what's nice about this campaign. It's got its own uniqueness, and it's got its own sort of grassroots momentum that I can't even control, quite frankly. People I have just on their own come up, like your buddy Jeff came up with his own collage of videos to push out on Facebook to get the message out about me. We had our own folks come up and start to refute the lies. My buddy Tom Morrison cut a Facebook video that we've been using today as well, just to get the message out about who I am and what I stand for. And, you know, we had a couple people put together a really, really clever couple two radio spots in the LaSalle County area. It's fascinating. They just are doing this stuff on their own. One of your friends put up a billboard for me, right?
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On his own, which is great. So this is Take Back Your State time, which is fascinating.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I think this is the same way we win in November. Nobody's buying the Democrats' promises of higher taxes. Nobody's buying. There's a tax revolt going on in Cook County. You've got Joe Barrios on the ropes as the Cook County assessor for his inaccurate and really unfair assessment processes. He may lose his seat. He better lose his seat, because then we can get reform in place. So, I mean, this is kind of, I'm framing you to you the whole choice that you have here. But people also want to know what I stand for, what I want to do with this state. Well, we need to tackle some of our biggest challenges. We need pension reform, and that starts with new hires in the 401k system. We need consolidation of higher education. We need consolidation of K-12 education. I've talked about that. Every single school district should be a unit district, K-12 grade. Cut costs and align responsibility for these superintendents. You know, we could cut that down to less than half the school districts they have, just if we did that one thing alone. every unit, school district, union district. We have got to learn how to save money and be competitive. The government has got to be more lean in the state of Illinois. We've talked about doing Medicaid reform. I'd like a full Medicaid waiver from the federal government so we can design and programs that fit Illinoisans. I'm in favor of a capital bill. We haven't had a real capital bill since 2009, and we need to upgrade our infrastructure because the previous administrations, including Rauners, has failed to take care of some of our critical needs on infrastructure. But we're not going to do it if it blows through our budget. We're going to actually carve out in a responsible way the bonding, the money necessary to pay the debt service if we bond out for infrastructure. It's the only reason you bond out. Long-term infrastructure projects like that is what's necessary. We're going to stop all the bad legislation that comes forward. Think about that. Let's go back to Rauner's record a little bit. Not even Chicago Democrats and Mike Madigan signed taxpayer funding of abortion or sanctuary state or a bailout of Chicago public schools or a bailout of Exxon, right? Or junk science on transgender stuff. They didn't sign that. Bruce Rauner signed all of those. All of those. That type of policy would not even reach my desk because they would know I would veto it. They could try all day long, but we would veto it. We're gonna file a balanced budget. We're going to do a forensic audit on every single agency. We're going to take care of our veterans, especially when they're dying from a preventable disease. 13 deaths, 11 lawsuits against the taxpayers, 4 more cases after Bruce Rauner's PR stunt in Quincy. It's no way to run your agencies. We're going to make sure the government in the state of Illinois is lean and honorable and taking care of things. There's problems in the Department of Corrections. There's problems in juvenile justice. And it's because nobody is paying attention to the details. I'm convinced of it. I am. So that's what we're about. We've got a lot of work to do in the state. It was 1,000 bad decisions over decades. Every single decision from here on out has got to be a good decision, moving in the right direction. Otherwise, you're just going to continue to see your home equity recede, and that's not fair. For most people, it's the largest investment. So we're going to try and cap property taxes. That's our goal, is to cap property taxes, kind of like Indiana does. We'd like to get to that sort of a system. We'd like to have the state be the primary funder of education, which means we have to have a lean education budget too at the same time. Every resource has to be placed into the classroom instead of all this overhead and administrative expense, because that's where it's headed right now. So it's time to get lean so we can get mean on the economic front, right? Take on our competitors. All right, so I'm Jeannie Ives. I'm asking for your vote, and I need all of you guys to be surrogates for this campaign over the next 6 days so we can win on March 20th and then take it to the Democrats. So you guys are all invited to the celebration party. It's in, you'll find it online. It's in Glen Ellen at the Abington. Anyway, thank you all for coming. I really appreciate you showing up for our team. We'll be around here for a while. We don't have to leave quite yet, so happy to speak with anybody and answer any questions. Thank you all.
And again, that was Jean Ives, who is running for governor. She's the representative of Illinois' 42nd district. And again, if you aren't, hopefully you can check, or you, if you're not sure, you can, if you live in Champaign County, you can check your registration or see if you're registered to vote at www, or you can feel free to vote, or if you're registered to vote at www.champaigncountyclerk.com. You can check the ballot, see who the candidates are, see what public office positions are, you'll be voting for. And the primary is on Tuesday. That's Tuesday, March 20th. And of course, there is early voting. You can also check the hours at if you live in Champaign County, you can check the hours on the Champaign County Clerk website. I'm going to take a short little break. This is a in honor of it being today's St. Patrick's Day, so we're going to play some Celtic music. This is Alton in their album The Gap of Dreams. The track is, I'm not really sure if I'm pronouncing this right, but it's Baka Shil Andi. So we'll be right back on WFT 90.1 FM. Another election voters will be deciding who to vote for is the Illinois' 13th congressional district on Tuesday with the Illinois primary. The 13th congressional district. The seat is currently being held by Republican Rodney Davis, and so the Democrats that are running for that seat are Jonathan Ebel, David Gill, Eric Jones, Betsy Lonergan, and Angel Sides. And as I said, they'll most likely be running, the winner of the Democratic primary will most likely be running against the incumbent Rodney Davis. And this past week, I talked to Jonathan Ebel, who was on campus getting students registered to vote, talking to voters about his what he wants to do, and kind of getting connected with him. And so this is my interview with Jonathan Ebel, who's running for Illinois District 13.
What is your top priority, or some of your top priorities for, running for, the 13th congressional district?
Mm-hmm.
What would be some of your top, or if you can, yeah.
The first thing that I'd like to do is to get an infrastructure bill introduced and passed. I think that's something that we could do in a bipartisan way that would benefit all of the residents of the 13th district, whether it's through improved infrastructure, improved roads, improved grid for green and renewable energies, improved access to broadband, but also could bring a lot more job growth to the district and some good union jobs in construction, and that would benefit lots of different communities here. So that's a bipartisan bit of legislation that I think there's support for on both sides of the aisle that would be beneficial across the district. So that to me is a big priority. Healthcare really matters a lot too, but I think that's the first thing that I'd like to do is to try to take on infrastructure.
Yeah, on your website platform, you're for a Medicare for all.
Medicare for all, yeah. Uh-huh. Along the sort of the H.R. 676 is the House bill. I like the Bernie Sanders plan also, but expanding and improving Medicare for everyone. We've got to be able to see doctors when we need to see doctors, and it's something that everyone is going to need at some point in their lives. There's no reason that we should be making it hard for people to get the health care that they need and creating disincentives to see doctors. It needs to be the other way around.
Yeah. I guess my question, and for, with guns, with what's been going on with guns in this country, gun violence, are you for some type of gun control legislation?
Absolutely. We need to get the NRA's money out of politics. So there's a campaign finance reform aspect to that problem. But yeah, I want to see what most Americans want to see: universal background checks on new weapons purchases and ammunition. We've got to close the gun show loophole so that people can't skirt and buy weapons off record. I want to see a national gun registry. We should be treating guns the way that we treat cars. So when someone buys them, it's registered, and we know that they're trained to operate in a safe, responsible way. We have to do a better job of keeping weapons out of the hands of people who have a history of mental illness or domestic abuse. And, I mean, there are lots of things that we could be doing to make ourselves safer. And the one thing that is getting in the way of that, or one of the things, is the NRA opposing any reasonable legislation and also opposing research into exactly the nature of the problem.
And I know you're a veteran, and
I am.
So I imagine you want a lot of more money or support in the VA veteran.
Yes, Veterans Administration.
And
VA medical care, VA benefits. We need to protect those and keep them from being privatized. VA hospitals, at least, the way that the Trump administration wants them to be. So we have to care for people when they come back from war, but we also have to care for them as we think about how we're going to deploy them. And frankly, Congress has been utterly cowardly when it comes to standing up to the executive branch and authorizing or not authorizing the use of military force overseas. So we have to revisit the way that Congress is involved in foreign policy. And I'm the only candidate in this race who has any meaningful experience in foreign policy. So I also care deeply about veterans and veterans issues. Education matters to me.
Yeah, are you for, would you be at least for, a progressive would be like free education or...
Free community college,
free community
for
college,
sure.
Least, yeah.
Not, I don't think it is a progressive policy to have free four-year university tuition. We don't need to be providing free tuition to the sons and daughters of the ultra wealthy. If they can pay, they should pay, and we should have a graduated system so that those who are from working and middle class families can access university education and in a way that's appropriate to the income level of their household. And we're not doing that right now. It's way too expensive for families who are in the working and middle classes.
Just kind of since you said you're paying a lot of attention to what's happening, or you know, with foreign policy. I guess did you get the news today that Rex Tillerson?
I did. Yeah, I saw that Rex Tillerson was replaced.
Wasn't
told by Trump that was what was happening. I'm no great fan of Rex Tillerson, but he did seem to be kind of a moderating force in an administration that is, to be frank, clueless when it comes to foreign policy. So I think it's a troubling development. It's not surprising because he has disagreed with the president, and we know that people who disagree with the president are on their way out. We'll have to see, and hopefully there will be other moderating influences that emerge in that administration.
And let's see. Campaign finance, you were for more of a...
publicly funded elections. The way that we do campaign financing right now privileges the ultra-wealthy, whether they are running as candidates and can self-fund their campaigns or can throw, huge contributions behind candidates and into super PACs that are funding candidates. It's not the way that we should be choosing the people to lead our country. We need to be doing that in a more equitable way and reducing, not introducing new barriers to getting involved in electoral politics.
Okay, and I don't know if you're paying attention. Tonight there's a Pennsylvania district.
Yes, Connor Lamb.
And it's getting a lot of attention because I think a lot of people see that that the Democrats have a real chance, to take back the House this year. And so is that something you're paying attention to?
Absolutely. I mean, what's stunning is that's even a close race in a district that Trump won by 20 points. And, I mean, that's a real testament to Connor Lamb as a candidate and to the Democratic Party there in Pennsylvania. It's also a testament to how awful Donald Trump has been as a president, that the people who supported him, I mean, they've got some serious buyer's remorse. And they are directing that toward the Republican incumbent there. I think his name is Joseph Cohn, and I hope that we will be celebrating a victory tonight for Connor. He's a fellow veteran, good guy, great candidate.
And I guess, as we kind of talked about, with the unfortunately the Illinois primary being the students away, mm-hmm. Do you see that as a challenge?
Yes, absolutely. It's a huge challenge, and that's why we're here on the quad today, encouraging people to vote early. And trying to, to flood the poll here with the voice of these students. And it really, this isn't a voice that's really important. And if anybody had any question about that, they should look to Parkland, Florida, and the changes that those high school students have been making in the conversation about guns and gun violence prevention. Young people need to get involved in electoral politics. They need to get involved in voting and getting out the vote. And we, as, an older generation, I'm 47, we really need to be listening more closely to these young people because it's the world for them and their children that we're shaping, and I take that very seriously. I have three children, ages 17, 14, and 11. They are growing up now in the Trump era, and they are mobilized, and they have very strong political opinions, and we need to be incorporating those opinions into our political conversation. And young people need to be taking the responsibility to come out and vote. That's part of being a grown-up, and we need to encourage that and celebrate that.
Again, that was Jonathan Ebel, who's running for the 13th congressional district for the Democrats in the primary that's Tuesday, March 20th. So, and if you haven't voted yet, if you're able to vote or if you're not sure if you're able to vote and you're 18 or over the age of 18, you can check at www.champaigncountyclerk.com. And if you were paying every vote will count, as we saw this past week in Pennsylvania at the 18th congressional special house election in Pennsylvania. That was a incredibly close race. So make sure you vote on at least by Tuesday. For the Illinois primary. Yesterday marked the 50th anniversary of Massachusetts Representative Joseph Kennedy announcing that he would be that he announced his run for president, and this is just that him announcing his just.
For the presidency of the United States. I do not run for the presidency merely to oppose any man, but to propose new policies. I run because I am convinced that this country is on a perilous course, and because I have such strong feelings about what must be done, and I feel that I'm obliged to do all that I can. I run to seek new policies, policies to end the bloodshed in Vietnam and in our cities, policies to close the gaps that now exist between black and white, between rich and poor, between young and old, in this country and around the rest of the world. I run for the presidency because I want the Democratic Party and the United States of America to stand for hope instead of despair, for reconciliation of men instead of the growing risk of world war. I run because it is now unmistakably clear that we can change these disastrous, divisive policies only by changing the men who are now making them.
And for those who don't know, Chris Kennedy, who is Robert F. Kennedy's son, is running for governor here in Illinois. And this past week, on Wednesday, students all around across the country protested in schools, high schools, in universities. They walked out of class just right around before 10 a.m. Wednesday and joined a 17-minute peaceful protest inspired by what happened within the shooting that happened at Parkland, Florida, at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Each minute, 17 minutes, was for the 17 victims who lost their lives at that shooting. And this is a video from the Washington Post of students who walked out and marched to protest gun violence on Washington.
Introduce Matt Post, student board president, Montgomery County Public Schools. Matt Post, thank you all. Thank you all very much.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Matt Post. I'm a 12th grader, the student member of the board for Montgomery County. And I believe that as students, we need to make a few things clear. To start, we will not sit in classrooms with armed teachers. We refuse to learn in fear. We reject turning our schools into prisons. We will accept nothing less than comprehensive gun control. And if it's what it takes, we will shame our national policymakers into protecting us. Not just in schools, but in churches, movie theaters, on the streets, and in the communities of color, which are disproportionately devastated by the sickness of gun violence. The lawmakers who fail to support us, those who look for every answer to our nation's gun problem, but the guns themselves, will be complicit in every death that comes after. To every politician sitting in Congress, working behind us, you get to decide who lives. And so this is not a partisan issue for us. There's nothing cosmetic about life or death. This is about guns, and it's about our morality as a country. When the Commander-in-Chief's solution to this country's gun problem is more guns, you know we have a moral problem in this White House. When national policymakers when national policymakers value the blood money of the NRA over the lives of children, you know we have a moral problem in the halls of Congress. And when this is doomed to happen again, when in the coming weeks and months more of my peers will be slaughtered in their own classrooms, when their deaths will be dismissed as collateral, you know we have a moral problem in this country. So let's make one last thing clear. Their right to own an assault rifle does not outweigh our right to live. The adults have failed us. This is in our hands now. And if any elected official gets in our way, we will vote them out and replace them ourselves. Enough is enough. Enough is enough. Now it's my pleasure to introduce a senator who has fought for us and fought for this cause for a long time, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
Let's hear it for Matt and his great words. Now, folks, 1 month ago, 17 Americans, 14 children, were killed at Stoneham. Let us remember them. Let us remember the thousands upon thousands of children who have died at the hands of gun violence. Yesterday, there were 7,000 pairs of unworn shoes here on the east front of the Capitol, representing 7,000 kids whose lives could have been before them. 7,000 kids who died of gun violence only since Sandy Hook. Enough is enough. Now, I've been through these wars. I am the author of the Brady Law and the assault weapons ban. The NRA has made me public enemy number one, and I'm proud of it. And we've been fighting for 10 years. Every time the vice-like grip of the NRA on the necks of some of these politicians has succeeded. But this time it won't. You want to know why? It won't. Because we have you. And together, we're going to win. We're gonna win. Don't give up the fight. We will win. And now it's my honor to introduce a great senator who has worked so hard after it was in his state that the horrible violence of Stoneham Douglas occurred. Your great senator, fighter for rational laws to keep us safe, Senator Bill Nelson of Florida. Great job, Matt. You were fabulous.
Thank you. Thanks, Chuck. Okay, you know we are grieving in Florida, and now you are giving voice to that grief. And when you march on March 24th, it's going to be a visible expression of the grief that we've been through. It's common sense that we should have universal background checks. And it's common sense that we should get the assault rifles and the banana clips off the streets. Keep on marching and keep on speaking out. Thank you. God bless you.
All right, that about does it for The World We Live In here on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Streaming online at weft.org. And just to make sure you know, the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. And so we're going to just wrap up here a little here on the world we live in as we come up at the end of the hour. So we are just going to read a few PSAs. The art theater listings for the week before Friday, at the art theater playing daily is the Fantastic Women, which won an Oscar for best foreign language film. The story is a sublime tale of love, loss, and an identity. It follows a transgender woman as she navigates prejudice and indignity after her lover's untimely death. It's screened in Spanish with an English subtitle, so that it's playing at the art theater that you between now and March 22nd. You can go to www.arttheater.org to see showtimes for that. And so, yeah, that will do it for the world we live in. And again, please vote in the in the Illinois primary on March 20th. And that will do it for my show. Have a good day and enjoy your St. Patrick's Day.
For decades, Consolidated Communications has built their reputation by delivering forward-thinking products, competitive pricing, and personal customer service. With Consolidated Communications, you spend less time trying to understand what loved ones are saying and more time communicating with them. Consolidated Communications is located at 1300 South Neal Street in Champaign, or online at consolidated.com, or available by phone at 217-344-4444.
From Derry Key we sailed away on the 23rd of May. We were boarded by a pleasant crew bound for America. Fresh water there we did take on, 5,000 gallons or more. In case we ran short going to New York, far away from the Shamrock Shore. So fare thee well, sweet Liza dear, and likewise to Derry. And twice farewell to me comrade boys who dwell on that sainted ground. And if fortune it ever should favor me, or I to have money in store, I'll come back and I'll wed the wee lassie I left on Paddy's green Shamrock Shore. My head when it was sore, and it made me think more on the lassie I met on Paddy's green Shamrock Shore.